Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The portrait of a loved one. There are those in our lives who we would do anything for without question, those we call family regardless of blood. Therefore, when something is amiss with our loved ones, we do everything in our power to help them. But what happens when our efforts, no matter how great, are futile? On a bright and sunny Sunday morning, Alicia Salamanca went to pick up her aunt like she did every Sunday to go to church. When she knocked on the apartment door and received no answer, Alicia tried her aunt's cell phone. Nothing. Concerned, she rummaged through her purse until she found the spare key she kept in case of emergencies and used it to enter the apartment. She called out her aunt's name, only to be greeted by the echo of her voice. A second call gave way to the sound of creaking from the master bedroom's floorboards. Alicia hurried through the hallway into her aunt's room. There, she found the woman naked and mumbling incoherent phrases while she twirled around the room like a ballerina. Then, she grabbed the bedpost and shouted,
"Verdadera madre soy tuya!"
before hammering her face into that bedpost several times until blood splattered the bed, floor, and walls. Alicia fell to her knees, trembling, and stared at the corpse of her aunt. She was in too much shock to take notice that the religious paintings of Jesus and the Virgin Mary her aunt kept in the room had been replaced by the portrait of a shrouded woman. I'm Agent Kai, and I've decided to make my reports for Laos in the form of a podcast. My hope is that you, dear listener, will discover the truth of this world and open your eyes to it. The cathedral bells chimed throughout the ancient city of Terraluna, a sleepy metropolis located in the northern region of La Mancha. I made my way through the crowds of hurried denizens heading toward the city's center, where the massive Terraluna Cathedral stood, its Gothic spires piercing the heavens. Luckily, my destination took me away from the crowds and into the almost deserted city hall, where Mayor Yon Espinoza was waiting for me. After showing security my credentials, which stated I was Señor Lázaro Torms, tour guide of Enlightened Tours, and had an appointment with the mayor, a detail they checked twice, they directed me to the mayor's office on the top floor of City Hall. There, a kind woman told me to wait a moment while Alcalde Espinosa finished a meeting with another person. It must have been an unexpected meeting, I gathered, for the mayor's door was open, and the conversation taking place in his office was broadcasted well beyond those confidential walls.
Pero ya, Alicia, ya, no te quiero escuchar más, déjame en paz.
¿Cómo así? The woman said.
No puedo creerte, no me estás escuchando. Hay algo extraño, algo malvado pasando aquí en Terraluna, John. ¿Y tú estás sentado aquí como un sapo haciendo nada? Sal de aquí, no puedo soportar más tu locura.
The woman cursed under her breath and walked out of the office. She gave me a furtive glance as she passed me and slammed the door behind her. I was told by the mayor's secretary that Alcalde Espinosa was ready to see me now.
Ah, Señor Torms, Espinosa said, smiling. Bienvenido a Terraluna, y perdón por lo que escuchaste. Esa mujer está loca.
No hay problema, I said. Estoy seguro de que ser alcalde no puede ser fácil, especialmente cuando se trata del público. Mayor Espinosa went on to say that that woman, Alicia Salamanca, was troubled and verging on insanity. Several weeks prior to my arrival, Espinosa explained, Alicia lost her aunt to suicide. And Alicia, the poor soul, could not accept that fact. She was convinced, Espinosa said, that her aunt was murdered by an evil spirit and had been trying to convince him to do something about it before this evil spread throughout the city.
Can you believe it?
Espinoza said, chuckling. He had asked me if I minded speaking in English. He didn't want his secretary, who he loved dearly, to overhear him talking about Alicia.
Silly girl, so superstitious, you know?
Well, since you mention it, I have heard rumors about recent suicides taking place here in Terra Luna. Espinoza's eyes widened.
How did you hear this?
He shoved the papers that were laid out on his desk into a manila folder. Enlightened Tours does its research, I said. Hence my visit.
No, no, Señor Torms, no se preocupes.
Espinoza ran his meaty hand down his face. I can assure you that those rumors are false.
So there's no suicides occurring here.
Espinoza remained silent for a moment.
Well, it's complicated. You see, yes, people have been taking their lives recently. Alicia's aunt and some others, we're not sure why. No one in Terra Luna is troubled. I'm sure the very few incidents that have occurred have a logical explanation. Maybe a coincidence. This is a beautiful city, and I think, well, rather, I don't think we should let this get in the way of enlightened tourists bringing their business to our wonderful city.
I agree, I said. Therefore, I will be staying in the city for a few days and nights to get a feel for it. I will take some field notes, and if all checks out, I will report back to my superiors with my findings.
Ah, very well, Señor Torms, Espinoza said, standing up. I expect you'll find your stay here in Terra Luna to be a memorable one, and if you need anything, please feel free to contact me.
Mayor Espinoza would have loved to believe that the suicides are nothing more than an isolated incident. However, the truth was more disturbing. The scattered papers on his desk, the ones he tried to hide, were all police reports of the increasing number of suicides taking place throughout the city. According to our intelligencers, the people of Terra Luna began taking their lives starting in August and increasing in number with each passing month. These people, dear listener, were found to be good-natured people who didn't fall under any troubling patterns that would lend them to such a desperate act. Take Alicia's aunt, for instance, Señora Elena. A kind-hearted woman and devoted Catholic, Elena attended Mass regularly, helped those in need throughout Terra Luna as best she could, and spent her free time reading the Bible to the point of memorization. Not married or in a relationship with anyone, she had no children of her own and considered Alicia her daughter. Therefore, she taught Alicia the importance of going to church and prayer. A deeper background check revealed that the only vice Elena had was wanting to spend too much time with her niece and, perhaps, forced a young Alicia to spend more time studying the Bible than playing outside with children her age. Of course, a person was more than what appeared on a computer. The details surrounding Elena's death were disturbing. Police reports detailing her death concluded that Elena, found naked, had committed suicide by repeatedly striking her head on her bedpost until she was crushed. Señora Elena must have stepped out of the shower, distraught, and decided to take her life. This was the reason police explained why Elena was found naked when she died. None of it added up, and no one was asking questions. It seemed that everyone was complacent, albeit disturbed, with ruling suicide. This did not jive with our intelligencers, nor did it jive with Patrice Landless or Cameron. There was something wrong in Terra Luna. Elena was only one of a dozen who had met their demise via their own hand, and I needed to find out what that wrong was before someone else decided to take their own life. I made my way across the Gothic city to Elena's apartment. Even here, the apartment building contained the Visigothic design of the city. Despite the fact months had passed, the apartment was left untouched at the request of Alicia, who maintained the place and continued its rent. I tried the doorbell. No answer. Therefore, I took out my bone key, a small key made of moldable metal called platinum that took on the form of any door lock, and used it to open the doors of the building and the apartment itself. Inside, the air was stuffy and the faint stench of bleach lingered. The place looked like it hadn't been lived in for quite some time. However, there wasn't an ounce of dust anywhere. I sauntered throughout the small place, taking notes of the books on Elena's bookshelf, mostly religious texts, and of the pictures scattered in the living room. These pictures were of her parents and of Alicia in various stages of her life. Then, there were the pictures of Jesus and the Virgin Mary. These pictures were face down. The large painting of the Last Supper was also turned around so that it faced the wall. After jotting down these observations, I made my way into the bedroom. Unlike the rest of the apartment, the bedroom air was stale and dust coated every ounce of the room. The cleaning team hired to clean what must have been a gruesome scene did a good job removing the blood from the beige carpet in all areas on and near the bed. Aside from that, what stood out in the room were all the portraits of a shrouded woman. They were all the same, a dark background with the woman's face, a pale complexion with sunken dark eyes and thin, stretched lips, shrouded by the large cowl covering her head. In truth, the woman's face reminded me of a death mask. I picked up one of these portraits with a gloved hand and turned it around. Scribbled in hurried handwriting in Spanish was a small poem. With my desires drained, my real mother, I become yours and only yours, and you become mine and mine, together to serve forever within the depths of time. My real mother, take me, use me, you are me. These lines were scribbled behind every portrait of the shrouded woman. I placed the portrait back on the bureau when I heard the slight creak of the carpeted floor. Reflexively, I twirled to the side and grabbed my attacker by the arm, twisted it into an uncomfortable position, and held them. "Suérteme!" the woman said. "Te suelto si bajas el martillo." The woman complied with my request and let go of the hammer she had in hand. I released her from my grip. The woman, who turned out to be Alicia Salamanca, asked who I was and why I had broken into her aunt's apartment. I informed her that I was Lázaro Torms and related the same information I had given the mayor. However, I added that I didn't believe the mayor when he said that all was well in Terra Luna. Later that evening, Alicia and I went to a nearby restaurant for tapas and drinks. This was mostly me, as Alicia didn't have an appetite. Alicia had recognized me from Mayor Espinosa's office and quickly detected that I wasn't a Spaniard, and despite my insistence on speaking Spanish, she was adamant about speaking in English so others wouldn't eavesdrop into our conversation. "There's something rotten in Terra Luna," Alicia said. "I knew at the moment I found my aunt." "I understand," I said. "Can you tell me what you think is happening around here?"
"I don't know. All I know is that something is evil."
Alicia rubbed her hands.
"The people who have died, I'm sure you've heard of these deaths too, weren't natural."
She paused.
"My aunt, she was never the type to be suicidal."
No.
"She would never do that. She loved her life. I know this to be a fact."
Alicia went on to speak about how Elena was a wonderful woman who did everything in her power to ensure she, Alicia, had the best possible life, and added that Elena was a devoted Christian who would never contemplate suicide.
"She would never enter heaven if she did that," Alicia said. "She was forced into doing that. And now, I fear her soul may be damned for eternity."
I took a sip of my Taranze. "I believe you, Alicia, that your aunt was a good person. I don't think she would take her own life. Do you have anything that would help in clearing her name?"
"What can you do about it?"
I informed Alicia that as a tour guide, I had gained the acquaintanceship of many high officials throughout Europe and could have them investigate the occurrences here in Terra Luna. She crossed her arms over her chest and gave me a hard look for a moment. Then she relaxed her arms and leaned into the table.
"While I was cleaning my aunt's apartment," she said, "I came across her diary. I didn't even know she kept one. It was full of so many memories and thoughts."
Alicia smiled.
"After reading it, now I feel like I've gotten to know her even more. Like more than an aunt or mother, more like a friend. Maybe like a friend who may have revealed too much, she grimaced. There were some diary entries that disturbed me. I mean, they weren't bad, just odd. And maybe it's nothing, but maybe it's something. Alicia went on to say that her aunt, in multiple diary entries, had written how there were moments when she was home alone where she wanted to walk around the house naked and pleasure herself on the couch, the hallway floor, and on her bed. She, of course, would fight the urge to do so and immediately turn to prayer to help her overcome this sinful desire. That's interesting, I said, taking a sip of my champagne. According to the police, your aunt was found naked. Alicia nodded. The police said she must have been showering, which is nonsense. My aunt would never be showering so late on a Sunday morning. Mass starts at 8 a.m. sharp. She would have showered long before then. Right. Alicia, may I ask you something?
Of course.
Do you know who the portrait of the shrouded woman is in your aunt's bedroom?
No, I don't.
Alicia paused.
Wait. My aunt did mention her a few times in the weeks before her death. She said something about her.
Alicia fell back into her chair and thought.
She said she was a saint? A woman, a nun, who had died and returned from the dead to help cure people's illnesses. That she was incredible and deserved our prayers.
How long has she been praying to this saint?
I'm not sure.
Dios mío!
A man who was seated at the bar jumped out of his seat and said that Father Reyes was standing on the roof of the cathedral. This turned out to be true. A minute after the man ran out of that restaurant, Alicia received a text message from a friend saying the same thing. I paid our bill, and we both rushed over to Terra Luna Cathedral. Father Reyes was standing on the small, flat ledge of the holy building that was flanked by the cathedral's massive towers. Two police officers were trying to talk the priest out of jumping, but Father Reyes, it seemed, was oblivious to the presence of these two. He spread his arms wide, looked up at the night sky, and said,
"With my desires drained, my real mother, I become yours and only yours, and you become mine and mine, together to serve forever within the depths of time. My real mother, take me, use me, you are me."
And with that, Father Reyes dove off the roof of Terra Luna Cathedral, a fatal 200-foot fall. Father Reyes was a well-known and respected priest within Terra Luna. He was only 42 with lots of ambition to do God's work. No one in the city of Terra Luna would have thought him to be disturbed enough to take his own life. It didn't make sense. However, what police discovered shortly after the priest's death may shed some light on his actions. Through the help of Alicia's friend, a police officer named Julian, it was discovered that Padre Reyes wasn't too padre-like. He turned out that Father Reyes forced himself on a young nun named Clara Morales. She would later go on to say that just before Father Reyes raped her, he said that he had been craving her for a long time, that she made his loins burn with passion. He couldn't help himself. He desired her too much.
I can't believe he would do such a thing,
Alicia said, a couple days later as we walked through Cervantes Park.
The guilt of what he did drove him to suicide.
I didn't agree with Alicia here. The fact that Father Reyes recited the exact poem Elena had written down verbatim disturbed me. Either Father Reyes and Elena were of the same mind, or there was something else going on here. And I had a thought as to what that something else was, but I had to make sure first before I could jump to any conclusions.
It was something else, you think?
Alicia said. My apologies, I didn't hear what you said.
You don't think it was guilt that killed him? It was something else, you think?
I nodded. I do, but I need to be sure first. I turned to Alicia. Do you know if Father Reyes had private chambers in the cathedral?
Yes, he had a room in the rectory.
Alicia stopped and placed her hand on my shoulder.
Wait, are you going to do what I think you're going to do?
I am. Then I'm coming with you. I suppose I don't have much of a say in this. Alicia smiled. You learn quickly, Señor Torms. The rectory was located directly behind Terra Luna Cathedral, a modern Visigothic house that looked more like a villa than a rectory. Alicia and I donned the holy threads of a priest and nun and made our way through the rectory into Father Reyes' chambers. Aside from a nun asking us who we were and believing the tale that we came from Madrid upon hearing Father Reyes' death, we didn't encounter much hardship in gaining entry into the priest's private dwelling. It was a large room furnished with Gothic-inspired couches and bedding, a large chandelier made of stained glass depicting images of doves and heavenly clouds, hovered over the center of the chamber. Throughout the room were statues and busts of Jesus, the Virgin Mary, and Saint Michael. All these statues and busts were turned toward the wall. The paintings, which ranged from the Last Supper to the Crucifixion of Christ, were turned round as well. And then there was the Coupe de Resistance, the portraits of the shrouded woman hanging all over. Some portraits were drawn by hand on the backs of the holy paintings, others framed and displayed on the coffee table, nightstands, and desk. Dios mío, Alicia said. Es el mismo retrato que tenía mi tía Elena en su apartamento. Yes, the same exact portrait your aunt had. Next to one of the portraits were candles nearly burned down to the quick. And it looks like Father Reyes has been worshipping this shrouded woman as well. Who is this woman? Alicia said, examining one of the portraits. What does this mean? La verdadera madre, I said, the real mother. It may be that your aunt, Father Reyes, and the others who took their lives have been sacrificing themselves to this woman, Alicia said. Santo Dios, no permites que esto sea verdad. But why do such a thing? Tia Elena would never do such a horrible thing. I agree, I said. She wouldn't. None of those who have died would. However, a strong desire might subject them to do such a thing, especially if that desire were exploited. What do you mean? Desires, dear listener, are a powerful thing. The root cause of all suffering stems from desire. A person feeling calm and complacent in their lives would have their pleasant world shattered when a strong desire struck them. Perhaps this person saw another who they felt an immediate attraction toward and were rejected by this other. Now this calm and complacent person's life has turned to one of sadness and anxiety because this other person doesn't want them. The person's desire has gone unrelieved. Now this person will languish in misery for a time. The only way to avoid such a fate is to relinquish all desires. However, this is impossible. Desires are needed to help us push forward with our lives. Only monks can produce the amount of effort needed to rid themselves of desire. The regular person cannot afford to do this. But a strong desire, one that has been festering deep within our minds, that gets exploited, may be enough to take over a person's state of mind, so much so that a person under this duress might no longer be in control of themselves. The body of Father Reyes, I said. Is it still being held in the morgue? Alicia grimaced. I think so. I can check with Julian to see. No, don't. That might raise alarms, and I need it to be quiet. Dios mío, no. You're not thinking of going to the morgue? That's exactly where I'm going, I said. I need to examine Father Reyes' body. It's the last piece of the puzzle that will reveal whether my hypothesis as to what's happening in Terra Luna is right. Hospital Avila was located a short distance outside of Terra Luna. When the thought of the hospital was conceived back in the 19th century, there wasn't much room for such a building in the old medieval city, and not wanting to destroy any of the Visigothic masterpieces that made up the city, it was decided the hospital would be built just outside of Terra Luna, on one of the open fields. That field was no longer there. It was replaced by roads and highways, but the hospital stood tall and radiant with its many windows, more modern than anything in the old medieval city. Using an authentic ID badge, courtesy of one of our intelligencers, that stated I was Lázaro Torms, civil guard, I gained entry into the hospital's morgue and was left alone to examine the body of Father Reyes. The corpse had death's pale touch, to it so that it looked more like a corpuscle than the remains of a person, especially with the effects of rigor mortis. I examined the exterior of the body, looking for any markings that were out of the ordinary. Nothing. Next, I grabbed some tweezers from the coroner's toolkit across the room and used it to poke around in the nasal cavity. These yielded no results. I then followed up by poking into the mouth. Dead end. Finally, I turned to the ears. The right ear was clear, but the left one contained something. Gently, I grabbed onto the obstruction that was wedged deep within the left ear. I gave it a soft pull. The obstruction moved and tried to wiggle itself deeper into the ear canal. I used the tweezers to latch onto it and pulled it out. This was no easy task, for the object tried to pry itself loose. After a good 5-minute game of tug of war, I managed to pull out the obstruction. Held between the tweezers' pincers was a 4-inch thick white worm with several hairs sticking out of its body. Some of these hairs, long black strands, some of which were deeply inserted into Father Reyes' body via the left ear canal, began to sway back and forth. The hairy dance ended with several of the loose hairs aimed at my direction. I tossed the tweezers and ran across the room. The worm used its hairs as legs. Some of those hairs, still inserted into Father Reyes' left ear canal, began running toward me. I grabbed the igniter, a silver cylindrical lighter, and waited until the worm was within a couple of feet before opening the igniter's lid and thumbing down the button at the other end. A circular river of fiery blue flame engulfed the thick white worm, burning its whole body and corresponding hairs, including the ones attached to Father Reyes' left ear, to ash. Once I checked to make sure there were no other worms in the body, I made my way out of the hospital and toward high ground. Standing on one of the hills that overlooked the city of Terraluna, I contacted Cameron.
"Did you find what we were dealing with in Terraluna, Kai?"
Cameron said. "I did," I said. "We're dealing with La Gusana." Cameron cleared his throat.
"Damn, I hate that thing," he cursed under his breath. "We had a case involving La Gusana a year back in Montserrat. We lost a good agent to that beast, and we thought she'd taken care of it."
"Agent Morrigan may have defeated La Gusana in Montserrat," I said. "This one may be an offspring from that one."
"Or it's the same one, Kai."
Cameron paused.
"A lot of monks from that mountain retreat were lost to that thing. It may have moved on as well."
Agent Morrigan, dear listener, was a brave and noble Laos agent that hailed from Ireland. She was known as a serious and lethal woman. Out of all the agents that have come into contact at Laos, Morrigan was the most fearless agent I knew. She was a great person, too, one who actually cared for her fellow human. So the fact that La Gusana managed to invade her body and soul using its worms, and had Morrigan live out her deep-rooted desire of drinking Jameson to the point of death, fell heavy on all of us at Laos, especially Cameron. He was her handler. But before Morrigan knew she was infected, she managed to either kill or, at the very least, reduce La Gusana to a weaker state. That headline on the Catalan news website will forever pain me. Unknown woman found dead in penthouse suite of the Mandarin Oriental Barcelona Hotel. Lyle's intelligencers retrieved her body and buried her in a classified cemetery a few days later. "Regardless if it's an offspring or the same one," I said, "I'll make sure this is the last place it visits."
"Watch yourself, Kai,"
Cameron said.
I'm not sure if I can handle..." "Just watch yourself, Kai."
Once the call ended, I took a moment to look out at the city of Terraluna under the fiery orange clouds that hovered above it. I took several deep breaths and began to focus my mind on the upcoming battle I had to face. Of all creatures known to Laos, La Gusana was among the most dangerous and feared by agents. You see, dear listener, La Gusana is a creature made up of thousands of thick, hairy white worms. It feeds off the blood and souls of human beings using one of its many worms that attach themselves into the ears and use their long hairs to infect the host's brain and, like a fungus, take over their thinking. There's no single form to it, rather, it's a hive mind. Think of ants and how they work. These thick white worms come together to form a single human-like form if it must, but it cannot hold that shape for long. The only way to defeat La Gusana, like ants or bees, is to kill the queen. Unfortunately, Arlisle's researchers haven't identified what the queen, the heart of La Gusana, looks like. Taking one final glance at the city below me, I began to make my way toward it as the sun set behind the massive cathedral. I met with Alicia at the Terra Luna Public Library, where I had her look into whether the city had catacombs, despite Alicia telling me that she'd never heard anything about such a thing in Terra Luna. Well, did you find anything at the hospital? I nodded. I did, and it's exactly what I feared. What is it? For your safety and sanity, I said, it's best that you don't know. No, you don't get to decide that, Alicia snarled. I want to know what killed my aunt. I need to know. Reluctantly, I told Alicia about La Gusana and how it worked.
Are you playing games with me?
Alicia, I don't have time to go into details about La Gusana. You'll just have to believe me or not, but I'm telling you the truth. It's important that you tell me what you found, otherwise more people will die. Alicia acquiesced and informed me that she did find information about there being catacombs underneath Terra Luna. Apparently, she said, during the medieval period, the inhabitants of the city built an underground graveyard to bury the dead during a time when wandering outside the city walls meant infection from the plague. Therefore, people lived and died inside the city walls. And, she went on, the catacombs were still accessible through a floor panel within the cathedral. The perfect nesting ground for La Gusana, I said. No puedo creer esto. Alicia paused and thought for a moment. What kind of tour guide are you, Señor Torms? How did you find this stuff? How do you know this stuff? You see a lot of things as a tour guide over the years. Alicia grimaced.
I believe it. But I don't believe you're a tour guide. That, or you're the most dedicated tour guide to your company.
I took a picture of the documents Alicia had unearthed. Good work, Alicia, I said, changing the topic. I appreciate your help.
Gracias, she paused. What do we do now?
We do nothing, I said. I'm going to prepare to face La Gusana in her lair. You be sure to keep a close eye on those you know, even those you don't, and let me know if they seem off.
I'm going with you.
Alicia, if you go with me, I cannot guarantee you or I will come back alive and free of infection. I need you to stay here in the city above and monitor the people, especially those who attend mass regularly. La Gusana seems to have a taste for religious souls.
Religious souls? Why?
Alicia said. I fear that some religious souls have the strongest desires, repressed, damned desires, if you like. Alicia took a moment to think.
Okay, I will stay up here. But how will I know if people are acting strange?
You'll know, because if I'm able to defeat La Gusana, those who are infected will run around like a chicken without a head for hours. If this happens, you need to grab them and sprinkle salt into their ears, nose, and mouth. It'll dry them up and kill the worms within them. Alicia shivered.
Dios, ayúdame.
Follow what I've said, and God will help you. I looked at Alicia. Listen, it's going to be okay. I'm not leaving here until the beast is defeated. It's not going to get away with what it did to your aunt and all the lives it has taken.
Vale,
Alicia said, tearing.
Gracias, Señor Torms.
She looked up at me and gave me a wry smile.
At least La Gusana doesn't know you're coming.
I didn't want to tell Alicia that La Gusana knew I was coming. I killed one of its worms in the hospital. It'd be alerted to it by now and was preparing to defend itself if it needed to. Instead, I gave Alicia a smile. I waited until midnight before venturing over to the cathedral. I had to rendezvous with the local intelligencer to receive a few items beforehand. First, silent spray. The spray that, when applied to the ears, formed an impenetrable layer of wax, but also caused the user to go deaf for an hour. Second, fireflies. Unlike regular fireflies, these genetically engineered flies, the size of a grain of sand, contained within a small shot glass-sized bottle, attached themselves onto the worms that made up La Gusana and incinerated them. Third was the shield mask.
a metallic face mask that kept any worm intruder from invading my nose or mouth. The fourth and final item was the mercury worm trap, a medium-sized carnivorous plant that fed on worms. If all went well, this plant would capture and devour the heart of La Gusana. Using the guise of a priest once more, and using the bone key, I made my way into Terraluna Cathedral. According to the documents Alicia had found, the entrance to the catacombs were located inside the crypt on the middle floor tiles in the sepulchre of Cardinal Miguel de Cielos, the first cardinal of Terraluna Cathedral. I checked the middle tiles and found that they were solid. It would seem that no one had entered the catacombs in centuries. Therefore, I used my watch, which contained a laser, to scorch loose the marble tiles. After several minutes, I was able to pry loose the four large tiles that made up the center of the cardinal's sepulchre. And true to Alicia's found documents, there was the entrance to the catacombs. Old cobweb-covered stone stairs led the descent into Terraluna's underworld. Terraluna's catacombs started off low and cramped. I had to use my watch's illumination feature to stave off the darkness. Hunched over, I reached into my pants pocket to retrieve my shield mask. While this metallic mask, in theory, kept me safe from La Gusana's worms, it did nothing to block out the stench that lingered throughout the ancient tunnels. Centuries of being closed off from any fresh air had allowed decay and staggered air to rule supreme. As I made my way through these cramped tunnels, I had to do my best not to retch. The small tunnels, after what seemed like hours, finally gave way to a large cavernous section. Here, there were skeletons laying in shallow graves along the walls from floor to ceiling. The floor was covered in bones and skulls of both human and animal. I wanted to examine the graves in more detail to understand how medieval society constructed such graves underground. But the faint sound of laughter caught my attention. The laughter came from the tunnel ahead of me. I started toward it. As I made my way through this rather spacious passageway, I could hear whispering coming from all directions. This was my cue to spray my ears. With the spacious tunnel behind me, I found myself in a large room filled with torches on the walls. I used my watch's laser to ignite one of the ancient torches. When it lit, it caused all the other torches around the room to light up as well, giving the room a dark orange glow. The room, it seemed, was some kind of preparation chamber. Possibly, this room was used to prepare dead bodies for burial within the catacombs. While I moved toward the stone table in the center, I saw, through the corner of my eye, a figure move. Quickly, I turned around and saw La Gusana standing in a far corner. It was dressed like a nun cap a pie, especially with the shroud over her head. La Gusana remained still, observing me. I could tell by the way it moved its head that the exposed face, a ghastly blue-white, was not alive. In fact, the face of La Gusana didn't move. It remained rigid like that of a corpse. However, its eyes did move. It didn't take me long to realize that the eyes were just worms wiggling back and forth. La Gusana started toward me. The closer it came, the more I could see that its body was pulsing against the dark robe. In truth, La Gusana's body reminded me of a garbage bag infested with maggots. I took a few steps back and picked up a broken cinder block. I threw it at La Gusana. The block went right through its body, revealing and scattering hundreds of thick white worms onto the floor. This bodily disruption caused the face, which I could clearly see now was, in fact, the preserved face of some woman, fall to the ground. The face then moved with alacrity across the room while the thick white worms sprouted hairy legs and began running toward me. "Let's light up the dark, shall we?" I said, shattering the shot glass of fireflies on the floor. Within seconds, thousands of fireflies lit up the darkened chamber and began incinerating the thick white worms. However, while the fireflies went to work,
I had to fend off some of the worms that were slashing at me with those hairy legs that were more like razor sharp scalpels than hair. I grabbed the worms and crushed them with my gloved hands. I did the best I could to get them off me before they could make any deep cuts on my person. I couldn't put it past these worms to crawl into a deep cut and try to control me. Luckily, the majority were trying to go for my ears, nose, and mouth. The wax was holding up. While I couldn't hear anything, I could feel the frenzied taps of the worms trying to break through the wax. As I battled the worms, I caught sight of the face trying to make its way toward the tunnel. That was the heart, I thought. Whatever was underneath that face had to be the heart of La Gusana. Quickly, I made my way toward a swarm of fireflies. The fiery insects went to work immediately. Before I knew it, the fireflies had incinerated the worms attacking me. Then they began to attack the remaining worms crawling around the ground. I pulled out the mercury worm trap and threw it just ahead of the moving face. The plant came to life when it smelled the heart of La Gusana. Using its bare roots, it began to crawl toward the face and trap it with its vines. When I caught up to the face, I turned it over and saw that underneath that petrified flesh was the fattest worm of them all. It had somehow attached itself to this piece of frozen flesh. What distinguished this worm, the heart of La Gusana, from all the others was its face. It actually had a face, a worm with a face. Well, it had many faces, for it morphed from Alicia's Aunt Elena to Father Reyes, Agent Morgan, and all its victims. Of course, the faces were all distorted. I let go of La Gusana, and the mercury plant went to work by shutting its jaws over the worm and devouring it. In the weeks that followed, Lyle sent out a team of cleaners to sweep the catacombs of Terra Luna and make sure no worms were crawling about. As of this report, there were no confirmed worms found. However, our intelligencers stationed in Terra Luna would continue to make the rounds throughout the city and its underworld to be safe. The suicides of Terra Luna, for all intents and purposes, would forever be known to the public as a mysterious occurrence. No other suicides in Terra Luna had been reported. As far as Mayor Espinoza was concerned, he was thrilled to be done with such a strange problem. He went back to his usual daily routine of counting his money and seeking out profits. Unfortunately, Lazaro Torms, tour guide for Enlightened Tours, decided not to go into business with Terra Luna, stating that, out of respect for those who died by their own hands, Enlightened Tours would go elsewhere as to not exploit the dead, much to Mayor Espinoza's disappointment. Alicia Salamanca, haunted by the incidents that took place in her hometown, decided it was best for her to leave. The memories of her aunt and the knowledge of La Gusana caused Alicia to move to Madrid. She relinquished her aunt's apartment and made a good amount of money from the place. Then she packed up her belongings and left her home of 27 years behind her. The portraits of La Gusana that were discovered in the homes of the victims had all melted into an unrecognizable jumble of paint. The confrontation with La Gusana left this agent with multiple injuries. Many of the cuts this agent received needed stitches. It was luck that the worms didn't manage to cut a major artery, otherwise his agent would have met his demise. Aside from much pain and multiple scans, this agent was deemed free of infection from the worms and was cleared to return to the field. The laughter and whispers this agent heard in the catacombs, after careful analysis and consideration, turned out not to belong to La Gusana, but rather of another creature. This agent concluded that the laughter and whispers may have belonged to Tamamo no Me, especially considering La Gusana had no vocal cords. It's possible this yokai, somehow, had watched this agent in the catacombs. Not physically, for this yokai was not present in those tunnels, but perhaps telepathically or through other unknown forms. This agent cannot help but wonder if the yokai's whispers were a threat or a warning about La Gusana ahead. Was Tamamo no Me laughing at this agent, or was she whispering, "Watch out"? More information would be needed to understand this yokai and her agenda. Imagine a machine that could grant a person any experience they desired. If the person wanted to be infinitely rich or wanted to experience love, the machine would grant the person these wishes. If this machine were a reality and people the world over could use it, would people ever want to return to the drudgery of everyday life? This was the thought experiment proposed by American philosopher Robert Nozick. He stated that by hedonistic logic, a person would remain in this machine for the rest of their lives. The only reason why a person wouldn't, he said, was because a person would want to do and experience these desires in reality. People want to be something other than an indeterminate sack of flesh, and such a desire-granting machine would limit a person's experiences to just what could be imagined and not lived. However, a person given the opportunity to live out their desires in a machine, desires that bring that person a plethora of pleasure, versus living their daily lives in a harsh reality, that person may never want to leave it, despite Nozick's counter-argument. According to psychological and motivational hedonism, human behavior is determined by desires to increase pleasure and decrease pain, and philosophers like Thomas Hobbes theorized that a person's ego was the main function that determined behavior. In Hobbes' eyes, that ego was a hedonistic one. Basically, a person would do anything in order to increase their dopamine uptake. Who wouldn't want pleasure when the other option was pain? Even modern philosophers like John Stuart Mill stated that the main goal of desire was to seek pleasure. Ever since humanity started to walk the earth, desire was always there dictating its pleasure principles. While a person's desires are pleasure-based, this doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Humanity needs desires in order to strive into the future. Of course, this kind of desire becomes more of a moral desire rather than a self-fulfilling desire. Plato refers to this kind of desire in his book, The Republic, stating that a person's individual desire should be repressed for the greater good of humanity. And while this sounds like a good thing, the truth is, a repressed desire can only be contained for so long before it consumes an individual. In the case of Señora Elena, Father Reyes, and Agent Morrigan, their desires, their deep repressed desires that were replaced by a moral desire to do good, were kept in check by the mental discipline exercised by these individuals. However, given a brief moment to relieve these pent-up desires, these desires overtook any moral desire they may have believed in. This was how La Gusana was able to control her prey. La Gusana allowed her victims to live out their repressed desires by shutting down their frontal lobes and overstimulating their orbital frontal cortex. Once this happened, the intense dopamine her victims experienced was so intense that they gave up any control of their minds, allowing La Gusana to control them and forcing them to sacrifice their lives in La Gusana's name, hence giving their souls to feed the worm. The thought that a person's desires drive them to seek pleasure for self-gratification is a frightening one. No one in this world who is human is spared of this fact. And while desires can be a good thing when used to pave the road for humanity's future, this agent can't help but wonder what that future will look like if the majority of the world's people are driven by self-fulfilling desires. It seems, for this agent, that many of today's leading minds are hell-bent on their own desires to seek more pleasure than do their due diligence. How can humanity flourish in a world where artificial intelligence tells humanity what to do? A world in which humanity, like a child, would rather allow machines, similar to that of Nozick's thought experiment, to play adults while people relieve themselves in the playground. This agent fears that humanity's future, if it continues down this path, may end up with the same fate as today's newest piece of technology, a brilliant piece of machinery doomed to fade into the ghost of what it once was.